Welcome to another episode of Carolina Commercial Real Estate Connection. Today we have Heather Young. Heather is from Texas. She is a serial entrepreneur working in real estate and the health industry as well. Heather, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Heather, we'll dive into all aspects of your business. You know, I want to start on real estate and kind of get into there. One thing I find extremely interesting about you is you are one of few women that seems to be drawn to the commercial side of the real estate. You know, we talk a lot of men in this industry, and to find a woman that has a strong interest in commercial real estate more than residential doesn't happen every day. So thank you for coming on today. And could you tell me a little bit about your real estate journey?
Yeah, totally. I started in real estate, just kind of doing whatever to get in the space. I didn't have good credit. I didn't have cash. So I found myself doing Airbnb arbitrage, where I was getting Airbnbs leased. I was leasing from the homeowner and then putting it back on Airbnb. I was doing that. I had a little portfolio of seven Airbnbs at one point, and then I was wholesaling. And I started wholesaling like fix and flips for investors, and then I realized like the profits for commercial property, like warehouses and car washes that were sitting either vacant or just like distressed, had delinquent taxes. There was actually a bigger profit and a lot more opportunity with that. So that's really where my business started taking off, was when we started wholesaling commercial property and finding deals for investors. So that's kind of like how I got started and started making some money. And but it was still very I was always tethered to one location. And it was hard for me to really scale that model with always having to have boots on the ground to analyze properties, to, you know, do some of that market research for me. So I then got into land, and specifically land investing. And with that kind of put me into a whole different world of, you know, finding land in rural areas and finding bigger parcels that we can subdivide. We can put a site plan together, just add forced appreciation with those entitlements. And then we, you know, would sell it either to the end buyer, being your, you know, typical retail consumer, but also builders, developers. And we still do a lot of lead generation, and we can reverse engineer our marketing for investors and find their specific product and find it at a good deal as well.
Lot to dive in on that, Heather. That's awesome. So first question I would ask you, one thing, you know, when you're saying that, okay, when we were wholesaling, I said, okay, there's more money in commercial. A lot of people would be very hesitant to jump into that, lack of understanding of commercial properties. They're a lot more confusing. Everyone lives in a home, so everyone understands homes, right? Not everyone understands a car wash or, you know, warehouse property. Those scare a lot of people. What was it about those that didn't scare you, or did you have experience somehow understanding of commercial property?
I had no experience. Yeah. And I think that what made it a little less intimidating was the fact that they were like abandoned, or, you know, like they were just in distressed. So like the sellers were just kind of like, man, take this property. Like it's about to get condemned, you know? So, you know, for me, it was just like, it felt like the same. I was going through the same steps as I would with commercial property. Like, I'm sorry, with single family. Mm-hmm. And since there wasn't like occupancy and, you know, having to figure out, you know, P&Ls on all of the properties, it was just, you know, basically figuring out what's the value of the land, because whatever was on top of it wasn't really, you know. And so I'd use just comps and tools for commercial land. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the play that we were running, was mainly just finding the value in the land.
Okay. That's awesome. And how long were you doing that? And how long ago did you start? That was the beginning for you, right?
Yes.
How long ago was that?
That was 5 years ago.
5 years ago. Okay. And we spoke a little bit before we got going here. She's 30. So that was when you were 25. And so that's fantastic to be at 25 doing that. So prior to doing that, what were you doing? What sparked you into real estate? Were you doing something with real estate?
Before that, I mean, I had quite a rough start growing up and got in a lot of trouble. Was trying to find my way. You know, I didn't have any support from the family. So I was getting into all kinds of things. But yeah, selling cars, selling motorcycles. I knocked on people's doors, I remember at one point, which was, you know, it was crazy to think. That was really what built, like, you know how that
your character, like, basically
the character, yeah. And you're like, you build this resilience, and mm-hmm. You just don't have fear of rejection when people slamming doors in your face and like literally telling you to get off your front porch. When you go and you do that, and then you start cold calling, like cold calling is nothing compared to getting the door slammed in your face. So yeah, it's all of the experience I had growing up really like primed me for getting into real estate, being kind of like this no frills, just like, you know, and it's hard sometimes being a woman in that space, very male dominated. But yeah, it would, you know, take no crap from anybody.
Yeah. And I think that's how you have to be. I mean, it takes a lot of courage to step out there. So it takes a lot of courage to go door to door, face to face. Yeah. It's easy for it to call someone. All they do is hang up the phone and then you're just right. Fine. Right. But when someone's in your face, get off my property. No, I don't want to talk to you. Why are you here? Get out of here. You know, that's could be dangerous at some point. Right. So you don't know exactly what you're going to encounter going face to face. So it takes a lot of courage. So doing that initially, then going to cold calling was probably nothing.
So exactly.
That's fantastic. And yeah, by the sounds of it, you know, going through challenges in life that you go through built a lot of character. And, you know, you have obviously a strong internal drive in yourself that you were not going to quit until you started to succeed. Right. So the commercial property, you started wholesaling and flipping that, started building up some experience. And I love the fact you've got a land investing company now.
Yeah.
And so first of all, let's first kind of dive into that. I know you kind of broke down what you do. How long have you been doing that? How wide of a band and area are you doing land deals in? And kind of for people that would be interested in reaching out to you later, kind of lay that out.
Sure. Yeah. So the land kind of came to me during COVID because it got hard to meet with sellers and to just get deals done. And I realized that with land, you know, I could basically do the whole deal from my computer. So I started scaling that probably 3 years ago. Was it 3 years? We're now 3 year, year three in COVID. Yeah. So, or before. I started and I was just wholesaling at that point because I still didn't have very much money, didn't have credit. And I had a couple guys around me that asked me like, hey, do you want me to invest with you? And I didn't want to take anyone's money at the time because I was like, no, I'm still really figuring this out. Like, I'd rather play with house money and get like a good solid model before I take on any that kind of responsibility. So I had just been wholesaling and finding deals for investors. And then, I saved enough cash to be like, okay, I think we need to start, you know, working and getting bigger deals. So I hired, I went through Greg's mentorship program and started being more serious and more intentional about buying and doing my own deals. So it's been about 2 years now with that experience of, you know, taking my own deals and taking it to the entitlement process and, or even just finding a really good deal and then putting it back on the market. Since we do quite a bit of lead generation, we end up having a lot of extra deals and we, you know, I just cherry pick, honestly. But yeah, I'm right now working mostly in Texas. But that doesn't mean that I can't, if I have an investor who's very specific, like this, we need, you know, 5 to 10 acres that is zoned this, that's in this area. I am more than happy to do marketing and reverse engineer that, in any market. Honestly, it's not hard for me to do that. So, for my own personal investing portfolio, I prefer Texas just because it's what I know. But if investors do have something and they're working in other markets, definitely able to go into those markets and find what they're looking for.
Perfect. That's awesome. Okay. So quickly, want to go back on a couple things. So one, great to hear from someone that when you're doing deals and you're building up initially and you have people come to you, offer money and investment, a lot of people just take that, right? That's an easy path. Somebody else's money, you risk it. It's not your money. You having the internal thought process and having that character that you don't want to risk someone else's money. You want to risk your own money initially, build your own path first, make sure you professionalize what you're doing, make sure you get a solid process. Understanding that you want to take care of an investor money and capital, and you don't want to risk theirs until you have good systems in place. That's great and speaks to your character. So congrats on that. Next thing that you brought up was Greg Dickerson. So we are both in Greg Dickerson's mastermind group. So Greg Dickerson is a serial entrepreneur. Great guy, has an entrepreneurial mastermind group. If you haven't heard of Greg Dickerson, look him up. He's a fantastic guy. I did an episode with him early on with the podcast. So definitely check that out. He is a great person and great for anyone looking to get into development. Now, beyond that, when we're talking land deals, so there are a lot of people out there that do land acquisition deals, land wholesaling. Typically, that is this rural property in the middle of nowhere for people to use for maybe bringing an RV or hunting or whatever, right? So that's not what we're talking about here. You're talking about land deals for development, entitlement plays, subdividing. This is a whole lot more complex. This is a whole lot more valuable. And this is not just throwing out letters all across the country and taking in responses. You are identifying areas specifically and cherry picking areas and lots specifically. That's the major difference in what you're doing from the general population of land purchasers, land buyers, land flippers, right? So I want that to be understood. It's very niche. So, and I know you're just kind of running over that. So I want to get a little deeper into that. So tell me specifically what differentiates you and how you started to learn entitlement plays.
Yeah, thank you. So I think, I started to learn just based upon working, and I was that investor that would send out all the letters and just we casted a super wide net. And, you know, you kind of have to do that in the beginning to kind of figure out where you fit in and, excuse me. And by wholesaling land, it kind of, I saw that a lot of investors, what they were doing, what the, you know, I try to have conversations with everybody that I work with and, you know, I'd ask them like, well, why are you doing that? And what are your returns on that? And why do you prefer doing the entitlement over doing the whole thing? Or, you know, and so I just kind of started communicating with a lot of the people I was working with and figuring out like, what was their reasonings behind their investments? And I saw like, oh, that actually makes a lot of sense for me. Like, that seems like a little sweet spot to find, you know, and I found the counties that were really good because just asking really good questions on, you know, to my investors and finding out like what was their parameters. And then I kind of just copied. I was like, okay, well, if it's working for them and they're finding really good results, maybe I should try that. And to me, it was a great way for me to get in and out of properties a little bit faster than going through and developing a whole subdivision with, you know, houses and amenities. Like, that seemed a little bit overwhelming and just not what I was interested in. So yeah, that's kind of how I fell onto my lap.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, there's stages in this, right? So when you're finding, you know, if you have the ability to find good pieces of property, right, that have utilities available very close, and you're in the right section where there's growth happening, and you can find that parcel, you can make it's a stepped process. So there's different steps on where you make money and you can clear out and make a good profit. So you can buy the property, you can subdivide it and make some money. You can buy the property and go through the county review process, get approvals and entitle the property, maybe subdivide it into 8 parcels, have a road approved through it, and it is ready to go. Then you can sell that off to a builder or developer, and all of a sudden you can quadruple the property value on the land. So that's what we're talking about, where Heather's saying, yeah, I was watching some of these people and they're making big money. That's a vast difference from just taking a piece of property that's a piece of raw land, flipping it to someone, doing owner finance and financing it and making small payments of, you know, $400 a month. You know, starting out, that's great. Once you build that up, if you want to start to scale and make big money, this is a way to make big money with land deals. I love land as a builder, right? So I love identifying good pieces of property, finding those. And there's not a lot of people that understand that. You look at land planning, you can look at the zoning, maybe they're rezoning a certain area in a county, and you identify that area then and go start zoning in on that one portion of the area. And you have to know the area, like you're saying, Heather. So it's important when you're doing this, it's not just throwing out that broad net. This is specialized understanding of the area, but you can add a whole lot of value to that property and make a whole lot of money just entitling it. And you're making money, but even when you're selling that entitled property, the developer still has a big upside. This is like a clearinghouse. So you might buy the piece of land for $400. You entitle it. All of a sudden, that piece of land is worth $1.4 million, $1.8 million, right? But the developer taking that down, he's taking it on a per pad basis, how he's analyzing it for his development criteria. Then he's doing it, the flat work, the finished lots. Then he can take the finished lots and sell them to a builder, or he can take the finished lots and work with individual builders and sell them on a pad piece or develop it himself. Either way, he has a further upside going, and then the builders have the upside of taking down the property, and then they build the house and then they sell again. So there's the three tiers. You're at tier one, which is the quickest turn, but it takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of knowledge to get through that. So I just wanted to kind of go through those steps because you're just highlighting it quickly. But these are critical steps, and you are helping developers a lot. Right now, there's low inventory with everything. So we need people like you, and there's a strong demand in the marketplace for someone to do that. So I just kind of wanted to bring that through. And what you're doing is awesome. It's complicated, too. So what were some of the challenges that you saw initially that you overcame, or what was a big challenge you ran into that was a great learning experience for you?
I think that the biggest challenge is like going through when it's your first deal and going into a new market. It's like, if you don't have a pulse, if you're not working with, you should be calling your local land agents that are like specifically, I like them to be specifically focused on land. Mm-hmm. And have extensive knowledge of that market. And I think I didn't really see the value of that in the beginning. And so I hadn't talked to a land agent, and land consultants that work in that area, civil engineers, and surveyors, you know, I thought, well, I could just get a survey done and draw some little lines, like maybe just draw some little lines on a paper. Like, I think that's what they do, you right, know, right. It's just like, and yeah, I think that just that due diligence process, you know, you just get excited of like, oh, I got a deal. And, you know, I've seen a YouTube of people doing this and like makes a lot of money. So maybe just draw some lines and, you know, add value. Right. So yeah, just that.
There's a lot of trial and error to speak to what you're saying, you know, and that those are great points you brought up. So when you're going in an area like that, you are making all the right contacts. So those are the people that you need to reach out to. So the civil engineers, land consultants, there's land planners, basically, that are work and they have connections with the city council members. They know what's going to get through or not. So if you find the right people, and these are specific people, so it takes time. And Heather's obviously working through these markets and understanding it takes time. You get a civil engineer, but you have to know that land planner that has a connection with the city council.
Yes.
And that if you know the right land planner, they'll say, this is going to get through or this is not going to get through. It saves you a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy, right? So there's a lot of little nuances that you need to know. And this comes through trial and error. And so, Heather, you've done obviously a lot of initial work and groundwork to get that knowledge. The land agents that you were speaking about are great because they have the contacts of all the builders that are looking for land. Yeah. Right. And so you're reaching out to them. What's the demand? What's everyone looking for? Right. And that helps you narrow your search. So you're obviously doing a lot of homework. So that's fantastic. So let's kind of walk through. So now you've started into all this. Have you hit any big home run deals or great deals that you could kind of walk us through a deal?
Yeah, absolutely. I last year, small 6 acres, which, you know, sometimes I do. I like to go from minimum 5 to 50 acres. And I like this specific county because it's kind of like the Wild West, you know, mm-hmm. And you have very little requirement. There's no restrictions. It's close to Austin. It's my little honey hole. And so 6 acres, you know, wasn't something I was like, oh, wow, like I'm going to make a killing on this. But the seller, needed the money fast. And so in some areas and in some deals, you know, it's like you either negotiate the terms or the price. And, for this specific one, we got the price that we wanted. She got the terms that she wanted because she needed cash fast. And so, you know, I purchased the property with a lot of equity and I wasn't for sure if I could subdivide it. But I knew that if I put it back on the market tomorrow, it would sell and I'd still make a really good profit. So with that, we got that one. And, you know, last year was really tough in the market. And I was kind of like very hesitant to buy anything, you know, and I was just like, okay, I really hope this works out because I don't know if it's going to sell. I don't know how long we're going to have to hold on to it. But in this specific market, there was a demand for properties, land specifically, where you could put like a mobile home or trailer. And I do like the bigger tracks, but this one was like, okay, well, this is not so, you know, I'm not, this isn't like all of my cash. So I was willing to take the deal. And yeah, we ended up 5X-ing our profits on that. We just subdivided it into 1 acre lots. And then we sold the lots individually, which, you know, is, you know, selling it to a retail consumer, each lot was extremely profitable. And so we were in that deal for $100,000 and I ended up selling it for $600,000 in 4 months.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's a fantastic deal. So 6 acres subdivided into 6 1-acre parcels, sold each one for $100,000. That's a great return on your money. Yeah. And all that within 4 months.
Four months. Yeah. The, wow.
So that was a risk worth taking, and that's pretty inexpensive. Yeah. $100,000 for 6 acres. Whoa, that's about 18,000, 17,000 an acre. That is really a good deal. And so when we look at that, how were you, what type of a issue was the seller in that they were willing to take such a low price? Was it inherited, or how did you come upon it?
Yeah, we do a ton of lead generation, and the seller, usually our best deals come from the sellers who already have a price in mind. And we always try to ask them for their price before we give our price. And, you know, that's like number one key in negotiation. You know, you got to say your price first, or they got to say their price first. Yeah. Yep. So she just had a price in mind, and she didn't really tell us what was the issue of why she needed to sell, but she was like, I need $100,000 and like, I need it fast. And so we were like, okay, we can deliver that. So we ended up closing in like, you know, 10 days and got it under contract, and was just like, I was so excited about it. I was just like, sped through all of the due diligence. It's just like, yes, this is it. We're taking it. And, you know, which is kind of a risky thing. But like I said, I knew that if I did nothing to it and I just sold it as is, I could sell it for, you know, $200, $250 in that market. So yeah, it was, you know, it's just a matter of like, when we're finding our deals, it really is a numbers game. And continuing to nurture those leads and follow up. I have a team of virtual assistants, and they do the follow up, they do the lead generation and marketing, and they go through and score the property based upon, you know, like all these checklists that we've put into place. And they will, you know, score it. And if its score is really high in the sense of like, it's prime for what I'm trying to do, it's at a good price, it's got all of these maybe utilities, it's got good road frontage, then, you know, they'll ping me and say, hey, we got a deal, you may want to take a look. So that's pretty much what I'm doing mostly now, is just looking at the really, you know, good cherries.
That's awesome. So to go back on one thing, there's a book by Chris Voss, Never Split the Difference, to go back to what you said. Yeah, you never want to be the first one that throws the price out. Whoever throws the price out first always is normally the loser. So, all day long trying to not try. Now, sometimes you have to, somebody has to throw out a price, so I end up throwing out a price. But, you know, you try and always wait and let somebody else give you the price. But that Chris Voss wrote, and it's a great book, Never Split the Difference. So, as far as your virtual assistants, now that was a great deal. The virtual assistants, did you train and write up the criteria for the virtual assistants, or where did you come about giving them a training package, and where are your virtual assistants located? Are they in the Philippines, or where specifically?
Yeah, so we built out full like systems for them to follow. Mm-hmm. Virtual assistants, I get virtual assistants from South America and from the Philippines, because we do a lot of deals in South Texas. It's close to the border of Mexico. So we have a lot of Spanish-speaking sellers. Mm-hmm. So we have people from South America and the Philippines. And so, the training process was, you know, basically just built out by myself and my operations manager. And my operations manager, she's no longer with me now, but she's a civil engineer. And so she had a very detailed due diligence process, and she pretty much put that together when she was with me. I had to let her go last year because the market was just very uncertain, and I had to just scale back a little bit. And now I'm at the point again where I'm like, okay, I think we can turn this thing back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and that is fantastic thinking, having a civil engineer for your ops manager, because they are the ones that are all the knowledge. So when you're going through entitlement, a lot of times you're just handing mainly everything to a civil engineering firm, you know, once you know it can get through, but they're the ones that are going to lay out the plot, tell you if you can subdivide it, you know, tell you how much you can, how many lots you can fit in a subdivision. They're the ones that are going to, you know, are trained and understand how to do that. So having someone like that on your team that can then write up and is the type of person, you know, when we look at Culture Index or some of these cognitive people, they're the type of person that are great at organizing systems. Yes. What a win that is. So that sounds like a fantastic hire. It's a shame that, yeah, the market has been down. So you're smart not to have bought a lot of stuff last year. That was a kind of a terrible year. But yeah, things are starting to come around now. But I love that you put everything together, built up the system yourself. There's a lot of people that just farm that out. But having the understanding and knowledge that you've put that into yourself speaks volumes and speaks a lot to, you know, you are the type of entrepreneur that is does things, understands them, and doesn't just hand them off. You're actually getting in, understanding things, getting involved in the process. That'll bring me to my next portion of your entrepreneurial journey with your husband. You and your husband have started a health supplements company. So yes. The name of the health supplements company is, let me get back here, Fasted Athlete. So tell us a bit about Fasted Athlete, please.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for asking. So my husband started Fasted Athlete 2 years ago, and I came in as his primary investor, which also put me on like the board of advisors. And the supplement is for energy. It's a daily energy supplement that you would take every day in the morning with your coffee. And we call it Fasted Athlete because we are trying to educate people on the benefits of intermittent fasting. And with the supplement, it isn't necessarily a fasting supplement, but it does help to kind of extend your fast and just keep give you energy. Because I don't know if you've ever fasted before. Sometimes you feel in the beginning, you feel a little low energy. So that just kind of helps, you know, continue longer, you're keeping your fast. And the supplement is lion's mane mushroom, which is a functional mushroom that has been proven to be very good for brain health. It's a nootropic. So that's good for your focus, slow release caffeine. Everybody knows and loves caffeine, but this caffeine is slow release, and it's not a ton of caffeine. So if you take one or two capsules with your coffee, it just kind of like extends the benefits of your coffee. And it's very light, subtle energy throughout the day. And then creatine, which has also been a very well-studied ingredient for building muscle and also for brain health. Creatine, I think, is, you know, one of the most underrated products out there, but also like very, very well studied. So, and then we're launching a second product coming in 2 weeks. So you stay tuned with that. It's going to be for your gut health, which the gut's like stems from everything. Like if your mood, your hair, skin, nails, your energy. So when you get that gut, you know, operating properly, then, you know, everything else just starts to get better.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of people don't understand, you know, with gut health is, you know, you agitate your gut and it gets inflamed. And
yes,
until you really clear out, you do an intermittent fast or something to really transition out of that, that thing stays inflamed and you continually have gut issues. And that speaks, yeah, you guys have done a lot of research. That's amazing. Lion's mane's fantastic. So there's me as someone that has ADD really bad. So those are things that for, you know, someone with ADD, if you're trying to get more natural stuff instead of the typical ADD drugs, then the lion's mane is fantastic for focus for people with ADD. Obviously, you need caffeine when you have ADD, which is why they have speed in the medicine for ADD. So those two go in line with that. The creatine, obviously, you know, so could you tell me a bit more about that? So that's great for someone trying to build muscles. And so these all go together. So is how does that align and what are your guys' guidance as far as fasting with this? How,
yes,
how much does someone who hasn't done fasting, how much should they fast initially? And do you guys put a plan together that you have that someone could follow once taking your product?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tony. I think that a lot of people start off fasting, they get excited about it, and a lot of things actually, like they get a new diet or they get a new workout regimen and they're like, oh my God, I'm going to go all in, full throttle, fast for 48 hours, go to the gym for 2 hours straight, deadlift 700 million pounds. And then they do that for 2 days and they're like, I will never do that again. I hate this. This is not for me. I don't understand why people do that. And it's just not sustainable, you know? So if it's your first time fasting, working out, changing your diet, try to just start with, just start small. So we recommend for your fasting state to go 12 hours at first. And then every day or every other day, extend that fasting window an hour every time. And ultimately you want to get to, you know, 16, 18 hours. That would be your, it, that would be your, you know, perfect little intermittent fasting window. And of course, for men, I think that fasting especially is really good for men. For women, we have to be a little bit more careful on when we fast with our cycles. And we definitely want to, you know, make sure that we are aligning our fasting time with our follicular phase of our cycle. And, you know, you may want to do more research on that. And everybody is going to have a little bit of a different time that works best for them. But ultimately, you want to try to get to 16 to 18 hours of fasting. So basically just skipping breakfast. And I think that, you know, if you start with 12 hours and just work your way up slowly over, you know, 2 months, it can be very sustainable, and you'll notice an increase in your energy, and you'll start turning on your fat burning machine, you know, because we all have that, and our bodies are designed to pull and pull that stored fat for energy. So, you know, that's the key, I think, for a lot of people who are looking to get into shape and feel stronger and healthy, you know, and working out is great. And you definitely want to implement that. But it really is just eating less, you know, that's the biggest thing. It's 80% of your diet.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. A lot of it is definitely with any diet, you know, everyone, it's not so much the working out, right? It's all diet. And so I love the idea of this. So now when you're talking, you know, getting to 16, 18 hours, are you saying continually day in, day out, you should try and do this fasting, or you fast 1 or 2 days a week? Just to understand that a little bit better.
Yeah. That's a great question. And I think that everybody is going to respond differently. And everybody, I'm going to say for males specifically, I think for males, you can do it every day and have really great results. And so if you can, you know, just push out your breakfast an hour every day till you get to that, you know, intermittent fasting, like 16 to 18 hours, mm-hmm. I think that that's a really good thing for men. Now, speaking for women, you know, we are, you know, with our hormones and everything, that's a little bit different. So, for men though, I think that you definitely, every man should be fasting, intermittent fasting.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so with this, on the product that you have right now that has the lion's mane, the caffeine, the creatine, is it that you take 2 in the morning and that's it? And the extended release capsules get you basically with the caffeine the majority of the day, or are you taking the supplement in the morning and in the afternoon? How does that work?
Yeah. So you would take 2 or 1, depending on your caffeine tolerance. It's not a lot of caffeine. It's like 30 milligrams per capsule. And, your normal cup of coffee is like 180. So it's really not a lot. So you would take two capsules with your coffee or tea or water in the morning. You'll feel that slow release kind of trickle throughout the day. We actually have had a lot of reviews on people who have been taking Adderall or Vyvanse or those medications, and they've gotten off of those and are now just taking our supplement. So that is, you know, it does tell you something, but it's not a type of caffeine that's going to keep you up all night. So probably about, you know, after dinner, you're already done for the day because you just crushed your day on this supplement. You're just, you know, powering through. And then by the end of the night, you're ready to go to bed. So it's not going to keep you up or anything like that.
That's awesome. Good luck on the second portion of your rollout with the gut health. I'm interested to see that, and I will keep up. Something else I want to mention. If you go to her website, and it's, what's the web address?
FastedAthlete.com.
FastedAthlete.com. If you go on the website, they have the option you can download an ebook that they have on there, which will help guide you through the process and using it. It's a great supplement. Something looks like I'm going to have to give a try. I've downloaded the ebook. I haven't read it, but I'm going to read it. And
awesome.
The research, it looks awesome. I love Lion's Mane. So I think you guys got a home run here. I'm excited to see if it works for me. But get me all ripped up and shredded. Me going, and we'll see what happens. Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us today. If someone wants to reach out to you for land entitlement plays in Texas or in the surrounding area, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, thank you so much, Tony, for having me. This has been great. You can find me if you are specifically looking for land deals all over the U.S., I can find what you're looking for. My website for that is wholesalelanddirect.com. And then if you just want to reach out, have a question about anything, you can find me pretty easily on Facebook at Heather Young.
Heather, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and wish you nothing but success in your future. Thanks so much. Hopefully we can chat again soon.
Totally. All right. See ya.
Have a great day.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Carolina Commercial Real Estate Connection. You're officially one step closer to conquering the market. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Tony and Cameron, check them out online at www.timelessci.com. We'll see you next time.